And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum with your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What's up, fam?
And man, we got lots to talk about. We got lots of news and notes, Royal Rumble, Worlds Collide, and piggybacking what we did on the last episode, talking about something positive. There's something positive I want to talk about. It was about really good storytelling on the WWE's end, in particular with a returning legend and Hall of Famer, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But moving on with news and notes, Ben, what's on your end outside of the stuff that we talked about already that I pulled up on my laptop?
The thing I want to talk about, it's something that we're not going to talk about anywhere else. And it won't fit into the good stuff. So I'm going to just preemptively add this to the news and notes. And it's that Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle, as the Bros Awaits, won the Dusty Memorial Tag Team Classic. This is supposed to be a tournament that celebrates all things fucking tag team, and 3 of the 5 years that it's been on, it's been won by two random single superstars been stuck together again. And this is Pete Dunne's second year in a row of doing that.
Yep. And one of the funny lines was last night on NXT, where Kyle O'Reilly was saying that them winning was like disrespecting the history of the tournament, to which our friend Ben Penrod did a tweet going like, what?
So it is worth noting that one of the few actual tag teams to win the Dusty Cup is the Undisputed Era.
And the only other one was AOP.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 2 out of 5, that's not bad, I think.
Am I the only one that doesn't like that? Am I the only one that feels that's kind of... And we'll get into the rest of it in the final segment, because my final segment will come back to the Dusty Tag Team Classic. But am I the only one that doesn't like the fact that in a tag team specific tournament, non-tag teams have won it more than tag teams?
No, I'm right there with you, because like when you think about it, it's like, because I remember the very first one, and the final four was the tag team of Baron Corbin and Rhino defeating the Revival.
Yeah.
And then you had Samoa Joe and Finn Balor defeat American Alpha.
Yeah.
And then those two would obviously face off in the finals. And it was like, granted, both of those matches made American Alpha and the Revival huge with the fans, but they weren't the ones to win. And it was just so weird when that happened the very first time. But yeah, I mean, it would make more sense to have actual tag teams in the tournament and just not have them lose in the first round.
Or have an actual tag team win it. Like, the whole point of being a tag team for a significant amount of time is that you're better at it than two single superstars. That's the whole fucking point.
Yep.
At what point do people then turn and go, no, Pete Dunne should just be a tag team wrestler because he's won more tag team things than he has singles things?
Yeah, it's one of the things that really just doesn't make sense when it comes to that. So, anything else on your end?
That was the thing I wanted to slide in. Since we brought up the Revival, they've asked for their releases and they've turned down contracts again. I don't blame them personally. Allegedly, they turned down contracts that were worth more than $700,000 a year.
Yeah, I remember the first one that they turned down, I read, was like around $500K a year. Mm-hmm. And the most recent one being the over $700.
Yeah. And you've got Dawson, whose current contract apparently expires in April. And Wilder's expires in June, I think.
Yeah, because they added the 10 weeks because of the injury. Mm-hmm. The jaw injury.
Yeah.
So, which kind of puts a little bit of a hamper on that a bit.
Not really. Just means one of them gets to sit around at home not doing anything for a while.
Yeah. But
you know they're just going to show up in AEW, right? Like,
oh yeah, the writing is on the wall for that one.
Yeah.
And but not only that, but it's also been very interesting, like watching some of their backstage interviews, like on social media, like that the ones that don't make TV. And like they are literally trashing WWE for the tag team division. Because like one of the things that they were told was like, oh, if you guys stay, we'll rebuild the tag team division. And they haven't done that. It's still the Usos and the New Day and, you know, the same tag teams thrown out there.
I can't blame them because the Usos and the New Day are actually really good tag teams.
Yeah.
Like, you can't blame them for wanting the two of those involved.
Well, I put those two up there because those are the two, you know, most featured all the time. Whereas, how are you supposed to feature a more broader tag division?
No, in all fairness, the Usos haven't really been in the tag division since their return. They've been helping out
Roman.
Yeah.
And that's a fair assessment. But I was just using it as more of an in general.
No, I dig it. I dig it.
But I agree with the revival. It's like, where is the tag team division? Like, where is it on, you know, legitimately on Raw? Because you have essentially two singles guys as your tag team champions who have an actual tag team in their faction.
Yeah.
You know, like,
could you imagine being Akuma and Razor being in that booking meeting, just being like, hello?
We're the actual tag team here. It's like, but yeah, no, that was and I don't blame the revival at all for that. Like, they have every right to be frustrated, and you know, and they just need that fresh start.
Yeah, maybe.
So
maybe it's as simple as that.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But going from the revival, this happened last month, since the last time we recorded, but Ring of Honor star Jonathan Gresham is replacing Bully Ray as the head for Women of Honor.
About time.
So that means, you know, Marty, Skrull.
Maybe someone other than Bully Ray's woman will get booked well now.
Yeah. And like actually, remember we were talking about Odie Tai last time? Yeah. 2/3 of that group has retired.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That I just wanted to throw that out there because we were talking about Ring of Honor's women division.
Yeah.
And that was somebody we were talking about the last time. So he takes over the booking for that. We'll talk more about the Rumble, but there is some Rumble news to talk about. More backstage stuff. One of which being Brock Lesnar and Matt Riddle getting into a backstage verbal altercation prior to the Rumble itself.
No, it wasn't really much of an altercation. It was just Brock Lesnar going, I'm never going to work with you, dude.
Yeah.
Basically. And then Matt Riddle the next day being like, chicken.
And I wouldn't be surprised.
Which led to a meeting at the Performance Center with the talent being told not to call out people on Raw or SmackDown, to which everybody in the Performance Center just laughed.
Yeah, and it should be noted, and we talk about this all the time, stop calling Raw and SmackDown the main roster.
Yes.
Like, everywhere is still, like, because the meeting was, don't call out superstars on the main roster.
Yeah.
And it's like, excuse us, NXT has proven that they are the main roster now too. So
by far, they're by far the best brand in the company at the moment.
Oh yeah. And and so that people need to stop saying Raw and SmackDown are the main roster.
Yeah.
They really
do. Now I can understand why people do it, because for a long while that's how it was and people got used to saying that. But
it's not anymore.
They have officially said that NXT is its own brand now. So we need to start treating it that way.
Yep. But yeah, so that happened. I would actually like to see if the cameras caught that for like the WWE 24 for the Rumble. Mm. Kind of like how they did for the Goldberg one with Matt Riddle and SummerSlam. Mm. So that would be kind of interesting to see how, if we actually can see how it really went down. And then continuing on with Brock. Actually, we'll save this one for the actual Rumble talk.
Yeah, we'll
yeah, save the that actual runtime. And then something that happened after the Rumble was Andrade being suspended for a WWE wellness policy violation.
Yeah. Makes me wonder if they didn't just take the belt off him.
So interesting note about that. The reason that the belt did not come off of Andrade is because that was a Paul Heyman decision. Paul Heyman did not want Andrade to drop the title yet, because as soon as he comes back from suspension, he is going right back into his feud with Humberto Carrillo, which is why we're seeing Angel Garza with Zelina Vega, because it's supposed to keep the feud going with Andrade.
Humberto Carrillo's like a charismaless vacuum of shit. Like, yeah. There's this modern... How do I put this? Recently, there has been this trend of certain wrestlers who have all the talent it takes in the ring, but there's no reason to actually care about them. Right?
Yeah.
TJP. Right, was the number one that I can think of recently. They put the cruiserweight title on him and no one gave a shit. Right. Humberto Carrillo is very much in that mold. He's very, very fluid and good in the ring, but I don't give a shit. Like, he can't cut promos. He's not, there's nothing interesting about his character. There's no.
Do you feel like he got rushed up a little too quickly?
No. No. Because look at Angel Garza, right? Angel Garza just lost the Cruiserweight title at Worlds Collide, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yep.
And got promoted. And he's got personality and fire. And it's all on, partly on the writing, partly on the booking, but it's,
it's all on the wrestler.
You can only write so much for a wrestler to put into a microphone, or to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, a lot of onus is on the wrestler to make you want to like him, or make you to want to hate him. Like, in that essence, is it, am I kind of catching what you're trying to say?
Yeah, it's just they're putting a character like Andrade in this feud with Humberto Carrillo. Humberto had this huge opportunity earlier last year to actually like establish himself and make himself someone and make someone he cared about in his feud with AJ Styles. Ain't do any of that. So now that he's in a feud with Andrade, right? I don't care. I'd rather see Andrade feuding with Angel Garza. Right?
Yeah. And who knows?
Maybe, literally anyone else.
Well, who knows? Maybe what they're doing with the Andrade suspension, you kind of finish things up with Humberto after he comes back, and then it creates kind of the shift to Angel.
But that's not the point. Yeah. The point is now. Yeah. If the whole reason that they didn't punish Andrade was that he's going back into a thing with Humberto.
Yeah.
when Umberto is a charisma vacuum of suck.
Well, let's also keep in mind that with Paul Heyman, there's a list of guys who are pet projects of his. And Andrade, Humberto, Aleister Black, Drew McIntyre, and Ricochet are all part of this.
What kind of message does this send? Go violate wellness policy. There's no real punishment coming.
Yeah, that's the thing that's...
Especially if you're fucking a Flair.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that's going to be interesting to see what happens when he does come back from suspension. Because I did
and
think...
And I swear to God, if he just loses it the first match he's back...
Then what was the point? He should have lost it before he got...
Yeah.
Had the suspension announced, just like everyone else who's ever had it done.
They could have just played up an injury angle and had him off TV for a little while.
Kind of like what they did with Robert Roode.
Yeah.
There
were also in this same thing, there were initially rumors that Samoa Joe had been suspended. And
which has been vehemently denied.
No.
Well, yeah, and let's just put it out there. WrestleVotes likes to put stuff out there.
Bullshit.
Yeah, and like they're saying there's something in that Southern California water, which made everyone allude to the idea that it's Samoa Joe. And it's like, but it sounds like Samoa Joe has a legitimate concussion, which is why he's out. So it's like, you know, just because a guy was off TV doesn't mean you have to automatically assume that that's the reason why.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why, you know, with the website, we have a three source rule. If you get it confirmed by three sources, it's legitimate.
Yep. We'll often put posts in our little news thread that will be like, hey, take this with a pinch of salt till it's confirmed elsewhere, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I actually did one of those, and I said, hey, I want to do more research on this. And when we were talking about what we were actually going to talk about on the show, I said, nah, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find more info.
Also, it was boring.
Yeah. So next up, I have the big shakeup last Thursday, which was the WWE announcing management changes as co-presidents left the company. Uh-huh. And as co-presidents, George Berrios and Michelle Wilson.
You can sum this entire news article up in one word. Scapegoat.
Yeah, it's scapegoat, and not only that, but from some other follow-up articles, it sounds like there was some headbutting about the direction of the company. Mm-hmm. And it's like the golden thing about WWE. When you go head-to-head with Vince, at the end of the day, Vince is going to win when it comes to that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's also some questioning especially with the XFL starting this weekend. Because of obviously Vince's investment in that. So
I'm gonna sit here and be quiet.
Yep.
It's entirely possible. Everyone who wants to change the direction of the company is fucking right.
So, and not only that, but also Berrios and Wilson, they were the two that were really behind the WWE Network and its launch. So, and it's kind of intriguing that, and we'll get to this in a little bit because we're going to talk more about the WWE Network because the quarterly financial calls, that was brought up. And it's very interesting because these two were really behind this. And we could be seeing some inklings of where maybe some headbutting came along. We already talked about Revival. So just yesterday, WWE announced the signings and reporting to the Performance Center of Killer Cross and Timothy Thatcher.
Mm-hmm.
I know you are super excited for Thatcher.
Yeah.
Tell the people about the man.
So... I'm always in this weird thing when I talk about Timothy Thatcher because I was introduced to Timothy Thatcher through independent wrestling and things in a group called Ringkampf, where he was one of three members, and it was Timothy Thatcher, Axel Dietl Jr., who is now better known as Marcel Barthel, and Volter. And I can't fucking stand Volter, but I love the other two. And now to see that Timothy Thatcher has joined NXT, not NXT UK, NXT. It's very important that you point that out, because he is American. Timothy Thatcher is American. I guess that's why he joined and not. Because if he'd joined Imperium, it would have just been like shut down NXT UK. Nobody ever wins. Timothy Thatcher is just one of he's brilliant. He's very intense. He's just an amazing, amazing wrestler. And to see him now joining Axel Dieter Jr. and a bunch of the others under the WWE banner is great. I love it.
Now, if I read this correctly, Thatcher was actually Walter's tag team partner.
Well, it was a three-man stable, so they would rotate in and out.
Right. But Marcel Barthel came to WWE first before the other two, like at least 2 years before.
Yeah.
So Walter and Thatcher at least tag team during that time went
for
a little bit.
Not necessarily tag teamed, but like they were definitely two members of a stable. Like, and it's weird to explain, like, not every two man stable is a tag team.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like, because I was just like, because like I read it.
And also, let's be fair, if anything, Walter was Timothy Thatcher's tag team partner. Walter was the Jannetty here, is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha. So Thatcher is the Shawn Michaels.
Oh, of those two, for sure. Timothy Thatcher is just by far the best.
So we're just waiting for the barbershop segment for Thatcher, the real Walter for the glass window.
Look, in all fairness, Shawn Michaels did not throw Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window. Marty Jannetty flung himself head first through the window to escape Shawn Michaels. Okay? Like, we need to get that on the record.
So Walter will throw himself through the barber glass window then?
Yes, hopefully.
Okay. And then, of course, Killer Cross, who recently ended a run with Impact, is coming over.
Him and Scarlett Bordeaux, man, like, they were both really unhappy in Impact, and then they got the releases, and they're coming to NXT, so
yeah,
maybe they'll team back up in NXT.
Well, it's interesting to note that, because, like, obviously all the reports that we're reading leading up to this announcement was that Killer Cross could go
anywhere.
He could go Raw, he can go SmackDown. Maybe not necessarily start in NXT. It'll be interesting to see what route they go with both of them.
Well, in all fairness, they haven't reported to NXT. They've reported to the Performance Center.
Yeah.
Which means they could spend a little while there and then show up on the main roster, if that's how, or Raw, SmackDown, or however you want to call it.
And then you can have Thatcher join Imperium and just shut things down.
I think that would be a waste of Timothy Thatcher, but...
Yeah. Like, you could actually probably put Thatcher on NXT UK and have him be a single star, and like the storyline could essentially write itself because of the history between those three guys. Yeah. All Elite Wrestling, this is one that you shared this morning. All Elite Wrestling toy line to be shown at the Toy Fair 2020 in New York.
Yeah.
This year.
Yeah.
Interesting notes about this. The guy who's behind it is the guy who originally did some of the stuff for WWE, like the Jack Specific toys.
Yeah. It's the company's called Wicked Cool Toys.
/ Jazzwares. And Jazzwares.
The Wicked Cool does the rings that people buy and customize. Through Ringside Collectibles and things like that. They're also responsible for Pokemon, so some Pokemon toys that they do. They're the folks that do Cabbage Patch Kids. And for those of you who know collectible things, the Pop Wannabes Lame-O, Wiki Cool Toys do those as well.
Yes. And this would actually be unveiled on February 22nd.
Yeah, which at Toy Fair.
Yeah, at Toy Fair, so no, in 2 weeks.
There's no hint as to who's in the first series. There's no line as to whether there'll be special packs, nothing of that. Just an announcement that they will exist. What form that will take, we don't know yet.
Yeah, but we'll find out in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
When that's announced. All right, so we were talking about the network earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So today was the quarter four and full year 2019 earnings report and investors call. That the company is considering strategic changes to the WWE network. Mm-hmm. In regards to the network monetization, Vince said they have a lot of options, which include selling their rights to the majors, who are said to be clamoring to get WWE's content. The majors presumably being other networks or streaming services. Vince said there's no better time than right now to exercise the selling of those rights. He also added that this would be a significant increase in revenue and the potential changes would be transformative for the WWE.
He also, Dave pointed out in a follow-up to this, Uncle Dave posted that it's also about, partly about changing the way the WWE does business to entice more big-name stars to work with them.
Yeah. McMahon noted that the major players are very interested in WWE OTT, over-the-top content.
Mm-hmm.
But he would not elaborate on who those potential partners could be. Mm-hmm. Obvious reasons, because NDAs and probably stuff like that are, yep, in effect. One of the big things is that
he did say that to expect announcements in quarter one, though.
Yeah, if it happens, yeah, in quarter one. But those, it's possible that we see the WWE pay-per-view events airing on another platform in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they go off not, and it sounds like it's not all the pay-per-views, but some of the pay-per-views,
the big four,
yeah, go off of the network.
Yeah.
Which would be very interesting to see how that would really work. Vince said later in the call that if WWE decides to go in that direction, announcement would be made in the first quarter, as we just said. Indicating that talks are quickly progressing. There's no word yet on what these talks would mean for the future of the WWE network and the tiered plans that Berrios and Wilson were working on up until their departure. But it could be very interesting to see what the platform evolves into itself.
Yep. It's also worth noting that there's a lot of speculation that this means that things like WrestleMania or Royal Rumble will stream on like Amazon Prime or YouTube or something like that.
Or Netflix, which is one of the ones that was, yeah, named in the article.
It is also worth knowing that MLW have been in talks, apparently, with Amazon about airing their show
on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, so... who knows at this point? Like,
yeah, it's interesting. I think it would be great for Major League Wrestling to get like a streaming deal with like Amazon. I think that would be really good for them.
It wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't know how much value they would get out of it, if I'm honest.
And then
MLW, not Amazon.
Yeah.
If Amazon is willing to just give them money for no apparent reason, then yeah, go ahead. But like, I can guarantee, I'll Dave, that I don't think that MLW will become a major draw to Amazon Prime, which means Amazon will be reluctant to renew it in the future. But
yeah, but what are your thoughts about all of this? Like, from last week, Berrios and Wilson leaving, and they were like the key people behind WWE Network, to what we heard Vince say today in this.
It all depends on what you mean, because we don't have any information yet. So how do I form an opinion?
Right. Well, I mean, we see a free tier now,
right,
on WWE Network. We see the $9.99 tier, which we've been with for 6 years now.
Yeah.
And now there's the possibility that, you know, say they sign a deal with Netflix. I'm just throwing a name out there. They signed the deal with Netflix. They announced it later in this quarter. And that WrestleMania is going to Netflix along with SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and Survivor Series. And you don't get to watch that live on the network.
Okay.
What does that do to the network?
Assuming that they are, that means they're removing them from the network, which I highly doubt. Then I don't, I, for me, it doesn't change the functionality of the network. Because I don't watch pay-per-views live 90% of the time. I watch them 2-3 days later, which is when they'll be uploaded on the network. I use the network primarily for older content. And that's still a thing, as far as I know, is going to be an option.
Right.
The fact of the matter is it's really hard to talk about how
something can impact it.
Not necessarily impact it, but like, you can ask me for my opinion all you want, but until I know what I'm forming an opinion on, I can't really form an opinion.
Right.
Right. Like, if they were to say, we're announcing that all of our old content is going to Amazon and you only get pay-per-views, that would affect it way more than, well, the big four are going to fucking Netflix.
Right.
You're like, all right. Whatever, because you're going to upload them eventually anyway.
Yeah. So, final bit of news and notes. There was a milestone that happened in WWE with the Brian Kendrick.
Yep.
When he wrestled on NXT UK, Kendrick became the first WWE superstar in history to have a match on all the following programs: Raw, SmackDown, NXT, NXT UK, WWE Pay-Per-View, WWE Main Event, WWE Superstars, WWE Sunday Night Heat, WWE Velocity, 205 Live, and Worlds Collide. So just to put this in perspective for everybody, Kendrick first started working with WWE in 2000 under a developmental deal. He then returned from 2003 to 2004.
Yep.
And from 2005 to 2009.
Yep.
Kendrick would return to WWE in 2014 and has been around ever since. So that's actually really cool. Like, I mean, it's not like really like breaking news or anything like that.
Do you want to know what another cool stat was?
Which was what?
This year was the very first time that AJ Styles has been in a Royal Rumble since his debut.
That's true.
Every other match he's ever had at a Royal Rumble has been a title match.
That is very true. And usually he's the champion too, if I remember right. Yeah. So yeah, this was his fourth Rumble pay-per-view. Yeah. So yeah, cool little milestones and tidbits that people are looking at as going like, what? You know, we thought it was cool. Screw you people. But moving on, we are going right to Worlds Collide.
Yeah.
Dude, this was such a good show.
Yeah, it was.
Starting off with the pre-show, you had Kaylee Ray defeating Mia Yim. Then in the opening match of the main card, you had Finn Balor defeat Ilya Dragunov. Mm-hmm. That was a solid match. Really good. And I can see why, like, when you see the reports come out about Triple H and who he's high on, you can see why he's really high on Ilya.
Yeah. Ilya also had a really good series of matches last year in Progress with Karin Noir, the current Progress world title holder, that were just beautiful matches. I watched them again while I was in the hospital last week. Just, oh, beautiful.
Then in our next matchup, we had our lone title change, which would be Jordan Devlin defeating Angel Garza, Isaiah Swerve Scott, and Travis Banks for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship, which was also the very same day that they handed or presented Angel Garza the NXT Christian Cruiserweight Championship.
Yeah.
But actually, is it just me, or did it feel like the end had the perfect surprise element, because it looked like Jordan wasn't supposed to get the pinfall at that time, because Angel looked like he was supposed to make the break the pin, and then he just kind of awkwardly didn't, and Jordan got the three count. I was like, that was the one thing that stood out the most to me, because it was a great
finish.
Yeah,
and I can't be happier. I've been a huge fan of Jordan Devlin for a long time. I feel bad for Isaiah Swerve Scott, but feel bad for Angel Garza and Travis Banks, but Jordan Devlin, man.
And one of the interesting notes about this match, first time you've ever had an Irishman, a Mexican, an American, and a Kiwi in a match together in like a fatal four-way matchup.
Sounds like the start of a bad joke, doesn't it? An American, an Irishman, a Mexican, and a Kiwi walk into a wrestling ring. Phenomenal match. I can't say enough about Jordan Devlin. If you followed any of his matches over the last 2-3 years, a lot of people gave him stick when he started in the NXT UK title tournament, the very first one.
Yeah.
Calling him Twin Balor, etc. But he's really come into his own over the last, 2-3 years. From his work in OTT to Progress to NXT UK, just... I'm so happy for him.
And since you had mentioned the Twin Balor thing, how ironic, Finn wins the opening match of the main card. Jordan Devlin wins the NXT title in the very next match, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Bray County Whitlow represent, you know what I mean? Like,
yep. And then in our next matchup, this was your match right here, good sir.
Beautiful match.
Of course, we're not on Twitch, so nobody could see me doing the mustache mountain thing.
I fucking love this.
Yeah,
match.
DIY defeating Mustache Mountain. This was so good. This is actually one of those where it's really hard to pick the match of the night.
I think this was match of the night. Personally.
Like this is definitely up there, but you can't discount the four way, and you also can't discount the main event.
Here's why I think this was match of the night, personally. The main event had so much build to it, right? It had been building for literal months.
Yep.
From Undisputed Era jumping Imperium and vice versa, right? The Cruiserweight match was a title match. It was, they were fighting for a title, right?
Yep.
DIY against Mustache Mountain were just Mustache Mountain turning around at DIY and going, "We're here, you're a really good tag team. Do you want to do a wrestle?" And DIY were like, "You're a really good tag team. Do you want to do a wrestle?" And then they did a wrestle, and it was really good.
Oh, God, it was so good. So, so good.
And if it had been any other two people stood across the ring, I genuinely believe Mustache Mountain would have won that.
Yeah, and not only that, but I really love...
There's the two biggest baby faces in NXT right now.
I really loved the end. I loved how they started the match because they, showed respect to each other. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the match, they showed that respect to each other again.
My favorite moment in the entire match was when Trent Seven and Tommaso Ciampa first get in the ring, and like Trent starts teasing Tommaso about his beard, and he's like, "Come on, man, you can tidy that up a bit. I can give you some tips." Like, and then like Tommaso tries to do like the mustache twirl thing, and Trent's like, "No, that's not how you do it. You do it like this, right?" And then Tommaso Ciampa does like the big fucking muscle pose, and Trent Seven gets ready to do one. He goes, "No, you win that, man. I can't even
like." Like, and that's the thing. Like, they brought comedy into the match, but the comedy didn't overshadow the actual match itself, too. Yeah. Like, it had the perfect blend of everything.
Something Trent's really good at. Starting off a match with a bit of comedy, and then the next gear kicks in, and you just sort of
go
to the echelons.
Perfect. Yeah. Great match. And then next up, you had the NXT Women's Championship, which at the time was called the NXT Championship. Rhea Ripley defeated Toni Storm.
These two. I don't know what it is. I don't know how any of it is, but these two never seem to just fire on all cylinders when they're facing each other. You know what I mean? You know how, like, there's some people that, like, you could put them in a ring and you could blindfold them and they could have a four-star match?
Yeah.
These two never seem to hit their stride together. They had that problem with when they had their first match when Tony won the UK title off of her, and they had the same problem here. I didn't really enjoy this match all that much.
It was just two people.
I love me some Rhea Ripley. I love me some Toni Storm, but they don't.
The two of them just don't connect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in our main event, we had Imperium defeating the Undisputed Era in essentially what became a 4-on-3 matchup when Alexander Wolfe got knocked out of the match early on.
Yeah.
In the opening minutes of the match.
Basically, he was on his knees and he went to take a front and back impact kick and tucked his chin too much. And Bobby Fish, who had been aiming for his chest because Alexander Wolf tucked his chin, caught him flush on the chin and knocked him the fuck out.
Yep. So Imperium would have to go down a man and would still be able to pick up the victory. Good match.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good match. Do you feel Imperium going over Undisputed Era was the right decision?
Yes.
Because it helps elevate NXT UK?
No. Just, I feel that, you don't really need to elevate NXT UK much more than you did with Jordan Devlin being the only title change on the card, right? Like, the showing that Mustache Mountain gave DIY, the fact that Rhea Ripley used to be in NXT UK. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Finn Balor, technically from the UK. So, I think it was just the right call. I don't like the fact that everyone's saying this is like Walter's coming out match, when I'm 90% sure that Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel shouldered like 90% of the work in that match.
Especially after Wolf got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like they had to improvise a lot of that match after Wolf got injured.
And like I said, props to all seven men, even to Walter, because a cog like that falling out of an 8-man already complicated match, to still put on a match that good when you're having to improv half, like 90% of it.
Yeah.
Mad props to you.
Oh, yeah. And just as a quick breakdown, including the pre-show match, NXT UK won 3 matches and NXT won 3 matches.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
It was even Stevens.
Yep. You will notice, however, that the pre-show match was not for Kaylee Ray's UK women's title, because she still only defended it once in like 200 and something days.
Yep. It is just a straight up, you had 2 singles matches, a fatal 4-way match for the NXT title, a tag team match, a singles match for the NXT women's championship, and then the 8-man tag team match.
Yep.
I think they did the Kaylee Ray Mia Yim just to get the women's UK champion up on on the show.
But you might as well just put the title on the line.
She should have. She won. You know, why not?
Exactly.
Coming up next, we have the Royal Rumble.
There's lots to talk about. So the other thing to note about Worlds Collide is this is where we found out about the we guessed, right? But this was also where we found out the stipulation that the winner of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic was going to go on to face the Undisputed Era at NXT Portland for the titles.
Yeah, because that was done right before the DIY Mustache Mountain match.
You had Grizzled Young Veterans and the Broserweights in the crowd. It was a hell of a...
That was something. A
very interesting interview segment.
Yeah. So. Because, like, it was weird. Like, Grizzled Young Vets was on one side of the ring.
Yeah. All smart in suits. And
then you had the Broserweights on the other side of the ring. And, like, the poor interviewer was, like, caught in the corner.
Yeah.
Like, at the barricade.
It was quite an interesting visual, actually.
Yeah. So moving on to the Rumble. On the pre-show, you had Sheamus defeating Shorty G in 12 minutes, 35 seconds.
This is an interesting one because I had expected Sheamus' first match back to be a lot more dominant than this. Also, what is it with the WWE and being involved with feuds where a short person is made fun of by a tall person? This is like the third feud in the last couple of years. You had Finn Balor and Baron Corbin. You have Baron Corbin and Shorty G, and now you've got Sheamus and Shorty G. And it's all based around the fact that one half of the match is not very tall.
Yeah. In the second pre-show match, you have Andrade defeating Humberto Carrillo for the United States Championship in 14 minutes, 20 seconds.
Again, we've talked about this. If they'd known that Andrade was getting suspended at this point, they should have taken the title off him. They should have put it on Humberto.
So apparently, according to the reports, they found out the next day on right before Raw.
Okay.
Yeah, so they actually found out the morning of Raw. It was
when you say they,
as in Paul Heyman, Andrade,
right?
Like they were informed that morning on Monday morning.
So he should at least be stripped of the belt. Like I can't underline enough how. I don't see that this is a good thing to not punish people.
No.
Sure, he's suspended for 30 days, but he comes back with a title and Charlotte Flair. Anyway.
Yeah.
Again, my thoughts on Carrillo. Talents, charismaless vacuum of suck. You know, so.
So, and then... to kick off the main card, you have Roman Reigns defeating King Corbin in a false count anywhere match in 21 minutes, 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then in the next...
I genuinely thought this was going to be the end of this feud.
So did I.
But then they had this other match on SmackDown.
They've had a couple matches now on SmackDown.
And it's like... why not do the rubber match at the Rumble? Why not do the blow-off at the Rumble with the dog food match? Because we all knew that's where this was leading when they poured dog food on Roman, right? We all knew it was leading to a loser eats dog food match, right? Like, I mean, that's...
Yeah. False hope.
Yeah.
Next up, you had the women's 30 woman Royal Rumble match for the right to challenge for a women's championship match at WrestleMania 36, which would see Charlotte Flair defeat eliminate Shayna Baszler. Some of the noteworthy names that came in the Rumble, I'm not going to name everyone, all 30 who were in it, but some of the noteworthy names was Mighty Molly Holly.
Yep.
Love that. Mercedes Martinez, who had just recently signed. Candice LeRae, Mia Yim, Dakota Kai, Chelsea Green, Tamina. Wait, Tamina still?
I'd like to point out that like 90% of the people you've named are NXT.
Yeah, Tamina, who's SmackDown, and I didn't know she was still around. Naomi returned, and she's actually listed as a Raw superstar. Beth Phoenix made her return and actually got bloodied pretty quickly in the match. When she hit her back of her head. Let's see, who else was Shotzi Blackheart, who recently also signed with WWE, made her debut in that match. Oh, and everyone's favorite Santina Marella.
Yeah. I have thoughts.
Go for it. Besides the fact that Shayna should have won.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Number one. Please bring back somehow Mighty Molly. Just Molly Holly in general is the most amazing thing. More of her, please. Even if it's just she shows up every now and again to do analysis.
I've been politicking this. Please
put
this.
Her on fucking
Rumble.
Twitter. Or not on Twitter. Put on Twitter.
Yeah. I've been politicking this. Hall of Fame.
She's already in the Hall of Fame.
Molly Holly?
Pretty sure.
No, she's not.
Isn't she?
Molly has not gone in yet.
Yeah, she's absolutely in the Hall of Fame, dude.
Sweet both.
I swear to God.
Let's see.
If not, she's been at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
She was definitely at Hall of Fame the last few years.
Oh, you know what it was? She inducted what's her face? Come on. In 2018.
Oh shoot. Who did she induct? I'm blanking.
Ivory. She inducted Ivory.
That's right. Yeah, she inducted
Ivory. That's why I remember seeing her on the Hall of Fame stage.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, she inducted Ivory, but she herself is
She absolutely needs to go in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. But I want to see her show up on like backstage.
Oh yeah, that would be like she hasn't been on Raw or SmackDown in years.
I want to see her show up on backstage.
Yeah.
Backstage
would be really good.
I could talk about Molly Holly forever. I loved Molly Holly when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Same here.
Notable that NXT had the most entrants in this Rumble at 12, if you include Beth Phoenix. And then we get to a couple of things that... We've got to talk about Santina Marella.
Yeah.
I get it. That they had Beth Phoenix in the Rumble. I get it that Santina and Beth had a match in that building. And they wanted to have a blow off to that, right? And yes, he was in there for like a minute, if you include the walk down. And most of that was just him stood there.
He was in for a total of 1 minute and 1 second.
Yeah, like a minute. I did not like it. I don't know. Just, I felt it kind of cheapened the whole thing.
I liked it with how he kind of got cornered between Beth and Natalya.
What? Why did Natalya have to get involved in that?
Well, because keep in mind, it was her and Beth were always the tag team.
No, I dig that. Yeah. But the storyline wasn't with Natalya. It was with Beth.
Yeah.
It should have been like Beth laying one look on him, kicking the shit out of him for a minute and then throwing him out
instead of him cobra
like self eliminating himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should have been Beth just kicking the shit out of him for a minute Anyway, then we get to the finish.
First father daughter to ever win the Royal Rumble.
Don't care. So Shayna shows up and she just eliminates everyone. And then we get to the final two, and it's Shayna and Charlotte. Now they've gone to long lengths with NXT to make Shayna out to not be stupid. Right?
Yeah.
So what the fuck was the ending to this match?
They made Shayna look stupid.
Yeah. They had to repeat the ending twice because Charlotte fucked it up. And again, they've shown Shayna to be clever enough to not walk into that trap, right? If someone's getting hanging there by two hands on the top rope, the first thing you look at and go, oh, they're going to skin the cat, right? You just look at it and you go, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, and then you walk over and they do it and you block it the first time and you nearly throw them out. So why do you walk back for them to do it again? You don't. You just stand there and you let them climb back in the ring and you whip the ever-living shit out of them because you're Shayna fucking Baszler.
Yeah, and not only that, but like, and we've talked about this before, Shayna winning was the thing that had to happen because the story...
You set up her and Becky.
Yeah, you set up her and Becky so much easier than what you're going to have to finagle to make it happen now.
Because you're also having to deal with the fact that they've got blood money between Royal Rumble and the next pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
So they're having to set up a bunch of matches for blood money and then
Elimination
start
Chamber.
The build, and then start the build to WrestleMania, right?
Yeah.
Like we're seeing it now with Ricochet and Brock Lesnar. Drew McIntyre is fucking forgotten at this point. Well, sorry, spoiler alert for the next match.
Yeah.
But like, because Ricochet, and there's no way that fucking we're taking Ricochet to Suplex City, right? We're taking a detour to Yeet Street, right? Like you saw what Drew McIntyre did to Ricochet to eliminate him from the Royal Rumble, right?
Yes.
He literally was like, "Wee!" Like, Brock Lesnar is taking fucking Ricochet to Yeet Street.
Yeet.
Yeet.
Yeet that motherfucker.
But, like...
But yeah, it's...
And there's no way! There is no way the Ricochet wins this match and takes the title off Brock Lesnar to set up Ricochet and Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Unless Ricochet does win the title in Saudi Arabia and then Brock wins it back at Elimination Chamber. But I fucking doubt it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you're looking at what Charlotte's doing now with her thing. Like, yeah, we already spoiled the men's. We'll talk more about the men's later, though. Drew said it the next night. Yeah. Lesnar, you're my bitch. Yeah. We're going at it at Mania. Where Charlotte has been doing the stalling. Like, they're essentially doing what they should be doing with Shayna Baszler. But doing it with Charlotte.
Well, I don't think they would have done this for Shayna Baszler. I think Shayna Baszler would have just been like, Becky, I'm coming for you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because Charlotte's going to challenge Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's Championship.
We think.
But whereas we know for a fact Shayna would have challenged Becky.
Yeah.
And it's like the story just would have written itself right then and there if you had Shayna. And this was also, we said this the last time, this is how you have Shayna make the jump from the NXT roster to the Raw roster, is by doing it with the Rumble. And now how are we going to do that? Are you going to do like an Elimination Chamber match? And that's how Shayna's going to have to get the opportunity against Becky? Yeah. You know, WWE just kind of put themselves in a spot with the whole, you know, Shayna Baszler situation. And of course, as I mentioned at the offset, first father-daughter that ever in the Rumble.
Don't care.
Yeah. It also feels like, and I do agree with some of these Twitter comments, it feels like Charlotte winning the Rumble was just you had to get this done now rather than later for Charlotte.
Yeah, maybe.
To have her get that check mark on that. So
I also wouldn't have been as annoyed with the result if the finish had been better. If the finish hadn't made Shayna look stupid. You know?
Yeah.
Which it very much did. It made her look real stupid. She just walked into skinning the cat like 3 times in a row.
So, the
other thing to note about the Women's Rumble, the last thing I want to note about the Women's Rumble, is how much of a badass Beth Phoenix is.
Yeah.
Enough said. You've seen the match, you know what I'm talking about. The woman looked like she was wearing spaghetti and meatballs on her head for most of the match.
Let's put this in perspective. Beth Phoenix entered in at number 19.
Yeah.
She went 23 minutes and 5 seconds. She did one elimination. Mm-hmm. She did the spot that ended up busting her head open 3 minutes into her time in the match.
She was the second longest person in the match, third longest person in the match, if I remember rightly.
Because Charlotte went
Bianca went 33 minutes, Charlotte went 27, and then
Alexa Bliss went 26 minutes and 34 seconds.
Okay, so she was fourth. All right.
Yeah. So it goes, actually, no, she was fifth. It goes Bianca, Charlotte, Alexa. Yeah. And then, you're right, fourth, because then it was Beth. Fourth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and Naomi was 22, yes. 10 minutes of which was spent stood on an announce table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kelly came back too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk Naomi, shall we, for a minute?
Yes.
I know that her return has kind of blown up outside wrestling a little bit, and that's cool. Just don't. Like, yeah, she was in there for 22 minutes, 10 minutes of which she was stood on a fucking announce table, dude. Like, I don't get it. I understand it's important for cultures and whatever and stuff, but... And it's good to see Naomi back, don't get me wrong. But don't invest in her to go too far anymore. Like, she's been injury prone over the last little while, and she might get one last run with a belt or whatever, but I don't know. She's just not up to the crack of a lot of the other people on the roster.
And not only that, but in the time that she's been gone too, there have been so many more who have stepped up. Yeah. And I will say this too.
And again, I do want to defend Naomi and say this wasn't a Sasha Banks situation. This wasn't her holding out for more money or being a crybaby. She was injured, and then, like, I think her father died.
Yeah, she had a legit family
issue. She had some legit shit she needed to deal with.
Yeah.
Respect to you, Naomi. You're great. Welcome back to the wrestling family and all that. But there's been a lot of people that have stood up while you've been gone, and I hope they get opportunities before you.
Yeah, and then also I want to throw this out there before we move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Do you know who we haven't seen in a while? And I was kind of disappointed we didn't get to see them in the Rumble.
Who?
The Iconics.
Yeah.
Billy and Peyton have not been seen for a while.
I don't know if they're nursing injuries or whatever, but I've not heard anything.
Yeah. Like, I haven't heard anything either. So it's like, it's one of those weird things. It's like, I hope they come back to TV soon.
Yeah, me too. So, they're super entertaining. Love me some Iconics.
And then and this would be a great one, even though we know it's going to be Sasha versus Bayley probably at WrestleMania for the SmackDown Women's title. But in the next match, you would have Bayley versus defeating Lacey Evans.
Uh-huh.
Predicted in a total of 9 minutes and 20 seconds, which would be the shortest match of the entire night.
Yeah.
Shorter than both pre-show matches.
Though it does say that something that the shortest match was still 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Previously, short matches have been like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I've thrown this out there. How great would it be to see like Peyton Royce versus Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship?
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen, but it would be good. Because Peyton, like, I've told you this before. I've seen Peyton go one-on-one.
Oh, Peyton can absolutely wrestle.
Oh, yeah, she can go.
Like, they both can. They just, they've been put into comedy roles. I just think that they're setting up Bayley Sasha.
Yep. If Sasha can ever be healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
Because she just openly admitted on After the Bell this week that she's nursing an ankle injury that she suffered on a SmackDown backstage segment with Lacey Evans.
Yep.
Next matchup, we would have The Fiend Bray Wyatt defeat Daniel Bryan in the strap match for the Universal Championship in a total of 17 minutes and 35 seconds. Ben is already face-palming, but I will say this. It was interesting to watch a Fiend match without the red lighting, and I think it might have had to do with the fact that they're in a open-air stadium compared to being in, like, an arena.
I don't think that's got anything to do with it, because the stuff in Saudi Arabia was in an open-air arena.
No. Well, I didn't watch it. No. Well, I didn't watch or look at anything in regards to that.
I hate The Fiend. I hate it.
It was cool at first, and now you're just kind of like, you kind of soured on it at this point.
It's overdone. Like, I still enjoy the Firefly Funhouse part of Bray Wyatt, but I just don't like any, and I have this problem in any form of media. I don't like anyone that doesn't have weaknesses. I don't like characters that don't. Like, Daniel Bryan kicked the shit out of this dude for 17, 18 minutes, and he just popped up at the end and won as if, like, he hadn't been in a fight. I'm so over The Fiend at this point.
Yeah.
I want him to. He could lose, like, I would rather watch a Brock Lesnar match, because at least Brock sells.
Like, and here's the thing, that The Fiend is supposed to face Roman Reigns at Mania. In theory, that's what's supposed to happen.
Right.
How do you even get to that point?
Elimination Chamber. Whenever the Elimination Chamber becomes number one contender. Yeah. It's that simple.
All right. We'll simplify it, because unlike the Roman Reigns King Corbin stuff, this was a legitimate blow-off match for Daniel Bryan. And
yeah, Bray Wyatt. They went through all of this. They brought back the old Daniel Bryan. They brought back the Yes movement. They brought back everything, and it didn't do a fucking thing. Like, what the shit?
Yeah. Next matchup, you had Becky Lynch defeating Asuka by submission to retain the WWE Raw Women's Championship in 16 minutes, 25 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, obviously now next week on Raw, we're going to be getting the rematch between the two.
I just realized that we're doing an audio recording and that hasn't come through. I just gave the wank motion. I don't care.
This is just...
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But I loved the man character when it first came around. And Becky just being a complete badass. But now it's just kind of...
It's kind of staled a little bit.
No. Because when Becky first became the man, she was facing off with Ronda, who was legitimately the baddest woman on the planet, right?
Yeah.
At the time. And then she got into the feud with Charlotte, and there was the three of them together, like bouncing off each other, and there's that awesome backstage segment where they all got arrested, right?
Yep.
Everything since then, everyone who's challenged Becky since then hasn't been able to up their game to meet Becky. You see what I'm saying?
So it's not a matter of Becky being stale. It's just kind of...
She's kind of beaten everyone now.
Yeah. And then realistically...
So something's got to happen to change that up somehow. And the thing that should have happened was Shayna Baszler.
Yeah. And then in our final matchup of the night, you had Drew McIntyre winning the 30-man Royal Rumble match by eliminating Roman Reigns last. So let's do this shit. All right. Entrant number one.
Brock Lesnar. Yep.
Numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 were Elias, Eric Rowan, Robert Roode, John Morrison, Kofi Kingston, Rey Mysterio, Big E, Cesaro, Shelton Benjamin, Shinsuke Nakamura, MVP,
yep.
Keith Lee, and Braun Strowman.
Yep.
All eliminated by Brock Lesnar. Uh-huh. And I have a problem with a few of them because I felt
absolutely do not.
John Morrison, Kofi Kingston, two of the... Okay, first off, John Morrison's first Rumble back since signing with the company. He pretty much opened the door for what Kofi Kingston and Naomi started doing with the scaving off eliminations. I would have loved to have seen John Morrison to try to do that.
Would have defeated the point of the whole first half of the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. It was cool to see MVP come back.
Yep.
Sucked and that he lasts 24
and
seconds.
And to see him on the next night on Raw for his final WWE match.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yep.
Lesnar would go a full 26 minutes and 24 seconds with 13, which brings him the record of 13 straight eliminations.
Yeah.
I don't.
Is this where we talk about the fact that his Royal Rumble run was like 75% of the amount of time he spent in a ring in 2019.
Yes. Let's see here.
You keep talking and I'll find the stat.
Okay. Yeah, so you had Lesnar do that, and then Ricochet would come out number 15. He would last a while to hold off until Drew McIntyre came in. Ricochet would do the would return the favor of the low blow to Brock Lesnar. Uh-huh. To which then Drew McIntyre would hit the Claymore to eliminate Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. So here's the stat. In 2019, Lesnar spent 35 minutes and 1 second in 8 different matches. So the longest being 13 minutes and 25 seconds against Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. This year, he's already spent 26 minutes and 24 seconds in a ring, and that was just the Royal Rumble.
So does that mean that at Blood Money, he's only going to be in there for like 13 seconds?
No idea. No idea.
But yeah, I really did like what they did with Shelton Benjamin, though. That was funny. Like Shelton Benjamin's coming out, like Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar are smiling, they're all happy. Yeah. Like Heyman gives Benjamin the hug, and like Lesnar and Benjamin hug it out on the ring, and then boom, elimination. That I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I
genuinely have no problem with any of the eliminations in the first. Let's call it the first half of the Rumble.
Yeah, because that's essentially what it was.
Because the whole point of everyone getting eliminated the way they did was to build to the moment that McIntyre threw out Lesnar.
Yeah.
Because in an instant, McIntyre became... Yeah. I would argue that was the single biggest rub anyone has received in WWE since Lesnar beat the streak.
Yep. And here's an interesting thing.
Oh. Shut up, Eric.
If it wasn't going to be McIntyre, it was going to be Aleister Black.
Yeah.
Because that it was
wasn't
the two...
even in the match.
No, Black was. Yes, he was.
Yeah, he
came in at 28. But funny thing. So you know that I was Facebook Living during the Men's Rumble match.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. So I was Facebook Living during the Men's Rumble match.
Okay.
And I was just doing it solely for like live live reactions. I'm not showing the pay-per-view. I'm not showing, like, you can kind of hear it a little bit in the background.
Yeah.
WWE shut it down.
Huh.
Right before McIntyre eliminated Lesnar.
Hmm.
Could you imagine seeing my reaction to that? It's like, oh shit, McIntyre. I'm like, but whatever.
You've never been the biggest fan of Drew McIntyre.
I've liked Drew.
Yeah, but you're not a big fan of Drew McIntyre.
But it was still
a I've been a Drew proponent since he came back. So,
but after McIntyre would eliminate Lesnar, and then
he grabbed Ricochet and just yeeted him out of the ring.
Yeah.
Like, it was a full on sideways trip to Yeet Street. Like,
yeah, and then
if you see the elimination, it might be the most insane elimination in Royal Rumble history. You just pick up, he's like, begone thought. Like,
but then next that would be The Miz.
Yeah,
which would he would only last.
So
30
can I
seconds.
Ask you a genuine question?
Sure.
You're going into a lot of detail about order and elimination and things for the men's.
I'm building Rumble. Up to something.
Yeah, but you're doing it to the Men's Rumble. You didn't want to do that for the Women's Rumble. Why?
I felt that the Women's Rumble had more. Like, I liked the Women's Rumble match, but, like, it was your standard Rumble, where it's, like, these were the people who came in. You had it a decent, like, unlike the Men's Rumble, where one guy literally threw out the first 13 guys who came in the ring with him. You didn't have that in the Women's. You had long, drawn-out, you know, groups that were in there.
You had Bianca Belair eliminated 8 people. You had Shayna Baszler, who eliminated 8 people.
And I think they set and tied each other for the new record for the women.
Yeah, beating, what's her face? Michelle McCool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, for the men's, there was one that I wanted to build up to, because it was the thing that we were going to end up really talking about.
Okay.
So Miz comes in, he lasts 30 seconds, is eliminated by Drew. But then this is when the Rumble really kind of becomes the Rumble again, I guess you can say. Because
there was a small moment where you had like Kofi, Big E, and Ray try to work on Brock. But other than that, it was mostly one-on-one stuff for Brock.
The person who lasted the longest against Brock Lesnar?
Keith Lee.
Kofi Kingston. 5 minutes and 6 seconds. Keith Lee lasted 3 minutes and 32.
Hmm. Keith Lee definitely... the reaction that Brock had to Keith Lee was quite interesting. He was just like, what?
John Morrison lasted 9 seconds.
Nine seconds.
Eric Rowan lasted 8.
Cesaro, 18 seconds. Other notable things. Braun Strowman, 1 minute and 48.
Yeah, he was eliminated at the same time as Keith Lee.
Yep.
But after The Miz gets eliminated, things kind of go back into the flow, because your next three people that come in the match are AJ Styles, Dolph Ziggler, and Karl Anderson.
AJ gets injured.
Yeah, AJ gets injured with the next person who comes out, WWE Hall of Famer Edge. Holy shit. Holy shit. The look on Edge's face when he came out, which, by the way, great job, camera guys. Or not really camera guys, but the people in the truck. Good job for cutting out on the first spear.
Yeah, good job, Kevin Dunn.
Yeah. Which apparently they fixed on the post version that's now posted on the WWE Network. Because everyone called him out for it, including Dolph Ziggler. the look on Edge's face after he got to the part where he was going to do the devil horns up and for the pyro, he had that look on his face of like, this is real. I'm really back. Like, he even couldn't believe it for that brief moment before he did the pyro. What are your thoughts on this moment right here?
I fucking hated it.
Because he should have stayed retired?
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. And it's what...
I'm just getting to the point where I will never believe a retirement again.
Yeah. And this will actually lead into our last segment, because I'm going to talk about something positive storyline-wise, which will involve Edge. And you'll have your positive thing that you want to talk about. Yeah, when Edge was doing all the spears, you know, AJ kind of overexerted himself on trying to sell the spear. But yeah, it's very worrisome about Edge, but we can say that from what we now know, 3-year contract.
Don't care.
25 appearances.
Don't care.
And I think he has to wrestle at least 3 times a year.
Don't care.
And it was all because of AEW.
Don't care.
Because they're going to make him like a coach producer and all that other stuff and have him wrestle on AEW.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Go be a coach.
Yeah. I've
signed into the Performance Center. Do anything. Do what you're doing with Shawn Michaels. I'm just at the point where I'm so fucking sick and tired of getting emotionally invested in retirements and people having their last match and people having to retire for medical reasons, only for 6-7 years later for them to just waltz back into a ring and take a spot from someone else.
Yeah,
so fucking tired of it. And don't get me wrong, I'm made up for the fans of Edge. I'm made up for the fans of Daniel Bryan. I'm made up for the fans of whoever's next. Right? Because it's going to fucking happen. But I'm the guy that sat at home and watched Shawn Michaels retire Ric Flair and was absolutely gutted. And then Ric Flair just started wrestling in Impact.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that watched Shawn Michaels get retired by The Undertaker and actually stay retired until Blood Money and then get retired again. I'm the guy that watched Edge put the title belt over the corner and said, I'm never going to get to do that again. Let me do it one more time and do his entrance for the second time and then retire. I'll need to watch him show back up in a Royal Rumble.
9 years later.
I'm the guy who watched Daniel Bryan have to retire only to show up 6 years later. Or however the fucking long it was.
3.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm getting fucking tired of this bollocks. I'm so fucking tired of it. And I know it's a cynical way of looking at it. And I know it's people getting lured back by huge paychecks and missing the thrill of the crowd and all of that, right? But at the end of the day, Edge's spot in the Royal Rumble could have been taken by anyone else. Sure, it wouldn't have had the same impact because it's Edge, right? But put an NXT dude in there. Put an NXT UK dude in there. Put Volta in there. And have Volta, like, change up the order a bit and have Volta, Keith Lee, Braun Strowman, and Brock Lesnar in a ring at once. Just have a chops fest for 5 minutes. Put Jordan Devlin in there. And have him showcase what he can do against like a Ricochet or Shelton Benjamin or Dolph Ziggler. Fuck it. You know what? Put Trent Seven in there and have a comedy section.
Yeah, and they had 0 NXT UK guys.
There were 2 people from NXT. It was Matt Riddle and Keith Lee.
Yeah, and no one from...
Put Dominic Dijakovic in there.
Yep.
Fuck it. Put Rhea Ripley in it. Because she gives no fucks.
And actually,
fuck it. Put Shayna Baszler in this one too.
And if I remember right, no, she didn't return. I was about to say, you know, if Nia Jax was ready,
yeah,
could have thrown Nia Jax in there.
But the point being, I think his Edge's. It was great to see Edge get that pop moment for him and for his family. I'm sure Beth was like, "Hey, I'm in the Rumble. I'm getting a sitter for Sunday night. What you doing?" And Edge was like, "Well, I don't know. Maybe I should give Vince a call." But I'm so over people that retire on retiring, especially when the reason that they retired
is medical
health.
Yeah, and one of the things that
I can see the fucking comments right now. They can have all the doctor's assurances they want.
Yeah,
doesn't make it any more comfortable to watch.
Yeah, because I know for you, it's still very uncomfortable to watch Daniel Bryan.
I won't. I'm just at the point where I won't watch Daniel Bryan matches anymore.
Yeah, but like with Edge, obviously he got all the clearances and stuff like that. And like, I understand that for Edge, you know, he had like a year left on his contract when he had to retire. And I know for him, he would rather go out the way he wants to go out. And I know that he's going to work the limited dates thing and stuff.
I do like that he came when he did his promo. He was like, "I can go out on my terms." And the first thing I was thinking was like, "Yeah, I wouldn't want my last match to be against Alberto Del Rio either."
So it's very, it'll be interesting to see how they use Edge, because we're about to talk about what's going to happen with Edge going into Mania, obviously, because that's what we're going to talk about. It's going to be very interesting to see how they use Edge post-WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And it does sound like they might use him at Blood Money. We'll see. It depends on how it works with the storyline going into what they're trying to do for Mania.
Yeah. For those of you who probably haven't caught on right now, when we say Blood Money, we mean the Saudi Arabia shows.
Yeah. The stuff that we don't watch.
Yeah.
At all. Especially the fact that I'm usually at work when that happens.
Well, I'm usually at work when I'm usually doing stuff when all the NXT UK stuff happens. Doesn't mean it's not on the network.
Yeah. So Drew McIntyre is the winner. He already has made it known that he's challenging for the WWE title.
Yep.
Specifically Brock Lesnar, who will yeet Ricochet all over Suplex City in a couple weeks.
They're going to bypass Suplex City and go directly to Yeet Street.
Final thoughts on Rumble?
A lot of people shit-talked it for the first half, but I think the first half was absolutely necessary to set up Drew McIntyre, if I'm honest. I like the fact that Brock looked as dominant as he did. He could have looked a little less dominant for sure, but he still could have, you know what I mean? He almost had to be that dominant to make it so good when Drew eliminated him.
So real quick, before we hop into the last segment, there's one piece of news and notes that we forgot to talk about.
Okay.
And that is AEW announced Double or Nothing for May 23rd at the MGM Grand.
It's not really news.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming.
We just didn't have the official date.
Yeah.
So that means
we'll talk about it more when we get actual matches.
Yeah.
They've got a whole other pay-per-view between then and now.
Oh, yeah.
They've got Revolution between then and now. So.
Which is coming up at the end of the month. But I just want to throw this out there. So if they do go with the quarterlies, it looks like Revolution is your quarter one. Double or Nothing is your quarter two.
All In, All Out.
All Out is your quarter three. And Full Gear is your quarter four pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring that up real quick because I forgot to bring that up in news and notes.
Yep.
All right. So something that you wanted to bring in this year is talking about something positive in the wrestling world, because we do a lot of shitting on the wrestling biz.
And we're going to let you go first, since it's kind of chaining onto something that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so the next night on Raw, Edge comes out to essentially close the show with a promo talking about why he's back, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Which then would bring out Randy Orton, who he kind of teamed up with in the Royal Rumble, kind of recreating rated RKO.
Yep.
Which was nice. And Orton would come out and say, hey, how about we reunite rated RKO? Which would then lead into an RKO to Edge. And I'm actually watching the video now so I can work off of what I want to talk about.
Yep.
He would RKO Edge, and then he would do the chair shot. To the back.
Concerto. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he would do the concerto. But the thing is, the thing that I really, really liked about this was the storytelling by Orton.
Yeah.
In this segment. Because in this segment, he hits Orton with, or he hits Edge with the chair. And Edge is like crawling around like he's in agonizing pain. He's screaming in pain. And then Orton just drops the chair, goes to the corner, and he's just like going, what am I doing? And then he goes and he takes the chair and he wraps it around Edge's neck. And he goes up onto the top turnbuckle. And he's like, I'm going to jump down and do this. And then after much thought, he decides, you know what, I'm not going to do this. And he throws the chair out of the ring. He starts walking away, but then he comes back and he grabs the two chairs and does the concerto. Like, but the look on Orton and the way he's telling this story, it just draws you in so well. Yeah. It really does. And like, this is something, you know, and I hate the fact that it's with Edge that they're doing it with, but this is the type of storytelling that we've been missing in WWE for quite some time. And like what we saw on Raw this past week, where Orton was supposed to explain his actions and he just goes, I can't do this, and walks out. Because he's so conflicted with himself of what he just did. Like I'm looking at the video now. He has the chair wrapped around Edge's head. And he puts his head down on Edge, like going, I don't know if I need to do this or not. Like, he's just storytelling. This is how you get me invested. This is how you get me to watch. You know, and
interesting Orton's been in years.
Yeah. Well, it's not just Orton. It's just the most interesting storyline.
I would disagree with that. There have been some interesting storylines in the last couple of years. But, like, Orton has very much felt like he's been... like he's been on autopilot for a few years.
Yeah.
I would argue this is the most interesting Orton's been since the storyline with Triple H.
Yeah, and I want to throw this out there, everyone. As everyone knows how we post the podcast, I'm going to put the tweet from WWE on Fox with the 4-minute video. Mm-hmm. So people can just watch it back and, like, kind of really watch. Like, really watch.
There's very interesting moments where, like, Orton just stops. And he's having these moments where he's just, like, looking at the fallen Edge and, like, talking to him and being like, why'd you make me do this? And you know that, like, when he's over there, he's like, you sure you want to go through with this, dude? Like, you know that in, like, Randy's just like, come on, man, this is your last chance to back out. I'm gonna have to fucking hit you with a chair. Like,
yeah and like, but I'll post this video up so everyone can watch it back and, like, really see what we see.
Yeah,
because it's just so well done. By not just Orton, but also Edge. Because Edge obviously has to be a dance partner in this too. You know, because he's has to play the victim.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. And this is obviously going to lead up to WrestleMania, Randy Orton versus Edge.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, yeah, it will be. And now here we're at the part of the concerto.
Yeah.
Boom, concerto. He just stands there and just falls down and just sits down and just stares at him like, what did I just do? So, but yeah, we'll have that up.
Great piece of storytelling.
Oh yeah, it really is. It's what we love. So, Ben, what's your positive thing in the wrestling world.
For anybody who knows me, the next three words out of my mouth should make no surprise whatsoever. But it is the grizzled young veterans. I have been a massive fan of these two for so long. It's a bit of my I watched the back is showing, but I've been a big fan of James Drake and Zach Gibson for the longest time. I've been a big fan of them as a tag team for the longest time, and I think they're absolutely brilliant. They're my favorite tag team on the planet.
What about Mustache Mountain?
Yeah, Mustache Mountain are good, but they're not Grizzled Young Veterans.
That's also true.
Also, I prefer Mustache Mountain and the singles competitors.
Fair enough.
I just think that GYV are a better tag team. Yeah. And to see them get their run through the Dusty Classic and people starting to open their eyes to them, I'm very, very happy that they're getting their dues, as it were. Hopefully, we will see more of them on actual NXT, especially since they hold a pinfall victory over the tag team champions, which should put them in the match at Portland, but didn't for some reason. James and Gibbo are just, they're so good. They're just so good. I am very disappointed they didn't win the whole thing, because I genuinely don't believe that Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne needed to win the Dusty Classic. I genuinely don't believe that Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne need the tag team title shot. I think it would have been a much better story if Grizzled Young Veterans had won the titles at Portland and been like, you're going to pay attention now. But just the fact that they've gotten a run this deep on primetime American television, no less, has been so good. So good for someone like me that's been following them for so many years. So yeah, that's my good thing for this episode has been the grizzled young veterans.
And then obviously a joint one for the two of us. The Velveteen Dream is back, baby. I know. Oh, come on.
It's good that he's back. Don't get me wrong. It's good that he's not in that he got cleared. But I'm not going to say that just him coming back is good. I'm going to wait for him to like get in a feud and actually do something with coming back.
Yeah, watching back the video from last night's NXT, it looks like he might try to rekindle his rivalry with Roderick Strong in the Undisputed Era. So he'll be like the fourth man along with Pete Dunne, Matt Riddle, and Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah. But the point more for me is, sure, he's back. Let's have him do something now.
Yep.
Rather than have them book it badly and fuck it up.
Yep.
It's good to see. All right, let me rephrase this. It's good to see the man himself off the injured list.
Yes. So
still prefer Grizzled Young Veterans.
Oh, yes. And great storytelling.
Yeah.
So with that, Ben, we are near the end. Where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me at Bob T. Goldfish on the Twitters. You can find me at twitch.tv/321_TV. And you can find the channel at 321 Podcast on Twitter or 3 Topics, 2 Guys, 1 Podcast. That's the number 3, number 2, number 1. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course, txhthockey.com/awesomemania for everything awesome mania. And next month, we'll be knowing more about Awesome Con. And I think, and then I have a 1 day appearance at Farpoint in 2 weeks on the 22nd. And I'm flying out to Denver next week.
And I'm not sure how everything's going to work for me because I'm screwing off to Florida next week.
We're both screwing off out of the state next week.
Disney and Universal and all of that.
Yeah.
And then the week I get back, I think I'm due to go back into the hospital again for a couple of days for a treatment. So
I like how we're both buggering off out of the DMV area for like the week. It's like, I'm going to Denver. You're going to Florida. We're going to have fun. So with that, Ben, take us away.
Well, guys, gals, and non-aligned pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace!